the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on Voice of Barbados. You can call us at 441790. You can send a WhatsApp to 253-4679 or an email to cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought to an association with our very good friends at ESFA White Rum, the best shot of the day.
If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, the regional tournament very much on. And I note with interest, the Windwards are doing pretty well, the Leewards as well. In fact, when you look at the Windwards last year, they could have won the championship, and they had a big victory against the lackluster Barbados team. And that would have been last week. And they're cooking good looking, as they would say, and we really want to congratulate them from there. And from far, the Leewards are doing pretty well. There's no doubt about that. And on the international scene, England, after winning the first test against India, they're wobbling, absolutely. Maybe they need to change their style of cricket, and they've been beaten rather badly by the Indians. Well, we're going to certainly do an examination of the regional tournament. There's no doubt about that. And we also want to look at England and India. In fact, without any further ado, I know that Johnny Baran has joined us, the noted journalist, and we want to keep him on too much longer because I know he's getting ready to go to bed, and he is with us already. We've also got Basil Butcher Jr. We're going to do a complete review of the matches played so far, and already on Zoom I can see my good friend, the co-host, talking about Dr. Andrew Ford and Philo Wallace as well. And I can see big Wendell Cornwell is there. He's going to be looking at the performance of the Leewards. But before we do anything at all, let's say hello to Johnny Baran. Johnny, we're going to start with you because we know your time is limited. England versus India. What's going wrong with England? Johnny, can you tell me?
Very good question, Andrew. Very good evening to you, and very good evening to all your listeners and panelists as well. England started off fairly well in the series and won the first test largely because of what can only be described as a freakish innings by Ollie Pope, arguably one of the greatest test innings by an English batsman overseas, and he produced that in the first test to win when England were really 370, but had no right really the position they were in, so far behind India, but they managed to force a total for India to chase. Then Tom Hartley was the success in the second innings. But in the second Test match, again, England had their opportunities, but India were just too strong. And to be honest, in the last Test in Rajkot, a place I know rather well, the wheels came off again. Again, it was the beginning of day three. England had a wonderful chance to go beyond that first innings score of India. They scored over 400 in their first innings. England, I think, at the time when we woke up on day three, were something along the lines of 220 for two, and then collapsed in a heap, giving India a lead on first innings of 130. They ploughed on to get 570 ahead of England, largely because of the extraordinary batting of this young super kid, Jaiswal, yes, who scored his second double hundred of the series and scored 22 sixes in the series as well. He was utterly incredible, and England collapsed in a bit of a heat in the final innings. And so they find themselves 2-1 down.
I see. So, I mean, are you surprised by it, though? You expected a much better fight having won the first test?
I think what's been incredible about this era, or surprising about this era, of cricket is that England have often been behind the eight ball in this Stokes and McCullum regime, if you like, across the last couple of years. And they've won from sort of fairly outstanding positions, yes, chasing over 350, I think, on two or three occasions. You know, they beat India with a 370 chase when India were with us about 18 months ago. So they're used to sort of winning from behind the game. But I think in Indian conditions, you know, India have not lost at home since 2012. You've got to be exceptional. And even with the losses that India are suffering, the likes of sort of Virat Kohli is out of the side and other big star names, they're a very, very difficult proposition at home. And they just keep churning out exquisite players with bat and ball.
I see. Doc or Philo, any questions for Johnny?
Good night to the panel and to the listeners. Johnny, I want to really look at the England batting to start with. In each match, England has faced a deficit of one sort or another. And how would you like to, you know, put into position the batting of Joe Root and Bairstow, and to a lesser extent the wicketkeeper, in causing these deficits so early on, because they haven't really gotten off this series?
Yeah, England's major problem, without a shadow of a doubt, is that middle order at the moment. I mean, certainly with the way in which Johnny Bairstow has gone since the return of his injury. He got one very good 100, actually, against Australia in the Ashes last season, but largely was without runs through the course of that Ashes series. And he's got a terrible record in India across the last two series that he's played, both back in 2021 and also this time round. And he can't buy a run. He's just got single-figure scores through the course of this series. I think a duck and four in the last Test match. And Joe Root, who's an exquisite player of spin, an absolutely brilliant player of spin, has been kind of caught up, I think, in that hyperbole of this new way of playing, this positive mentality, and really, you know, was sawn off on two occasions in this Test match. And when you don't get runs out of your pivotal player, who has over 12,000 Test runs, you are going to struggle. So those are the main problems, that middle order. I think the top order actually have done pretty well. Duckett and Crawley up at the top have done well. Stokes probably hasn't got the bulk of runs that he would really like in that captaincy position. And Ben Folkes probably hasn't got the runs. You know, he's just averaging 18. He'd like a few more runs a little bit further down the order. But that the engine room in the middle order that has been so reliable over the last 2 years has really failed England.
And from a bowling perspective, India has had, you know, really a good performance by Bumrah, and each of their spinners has been pivotal. Well, England depends on Hartley, and really and truly, none of the faster bowlers have really come on to make strong contributions in the series. So from a bowling aspect, England seem unable to really dismiss the Indians to really take charge of the series.
Yeah, I mean, look at Jasprit Bumrah. He's taken 17 wickets at an average of 13. I mean, that is serious hot in home conditions. Jimmy Anderson bowled pretty well in that second test, but was probably a couple of yards short in the third test. Mark Wood didn't get any wickets in that first test, but bowled pretty well, actually, to be fair, in Rajkot. And this spin attack, I mean, you know, the loss of Jack Leach is massive for England. The most experienced bowler, apart from Anderson, in that lineup. You know, a left-armer, and left-armers go really well, as we all know, in India. That's the kind of foil that you need. They're the bowlers that get wickets, you know, turning the ball away from the bat. And Leach has been a massive loss. I think Hartley bowled really well in the first test when he was offered a little bit of assistance. But I think that the major problem for England is the last two wickets they've played on have actually been relatively flat. And the class and the caliber of that Indian attack, if you like, really shown true class. And England just don't really have any answers. So they have a misfiring top order. And just simply, when it comes down to it, as a general rule in cricket, the best attacks win Test matches. It's simple as that.
I see. Philo, anything before Johnny goes?
Hi, good evening, Andrew. Good evening to your panel. Good evening to Sherlock Hart, Carla, to Heaven. Andrew, I just want to also condolences to Barbados, who passed away, Elroy, just a few days ago in London. But to Johnny, that style of cricket that England are playing, do you think it can bring success in India, seeing what you have seen so far?
It's a good question, Philip. I think when we last played in India, we played on four pitches. Well, the first pitch actually was quite flat. England had come off the back of a very good brace of wins in Sri Lanka, and were really match tight actually, and beat India in the first Test match. And after that, India just threw rank turners at England, and England had no answers. This time round, I think they're a little wary. They were a little wary of England's approach, and actually they produced, you know, the three wickets have been pretty good, really, and just England have no real answers. From a basketball perspective, I think it's a question. It's not necessarily about a gung-ho attitude. The idea or the principle of it is just going out there with a positive mindset and having the backing of the dressing room and the management to play in a fashion in which you want. The problem is, it's not necessarily working. I think sometimes it can be a bit too rigid. I mean, funnily enough, in the fourth test, in the last test match, in the chase, to be honest, England were really lacking a little bit more intensity. Might have been the way forward, actually. They got stuck between a rock and a hard place and got rolled. I think as far as the methodology, if you like, they probably, with a little bit more game management, I think that's what a lot of people have been talking about over here in the media. The likes of Jeffrey Boycott and Michael Vaughan have been very vocal on basketball. They like the idea, they like the approach, but there are occasions when you need to take your foot off the gas and measure the game a little better. If you look at the way in which actually Ben Stokes bats, he has a good look. You know, he has a good look at the match situation, then dictates the way he's played. You know, Jaswal is the man you really need to look at. He's scored 22 sixes in this series so far. He's been absolutely brilliant. His strike rate's been extraordinary, but he's been prepared to have a look. And actually, Basball, the entire mythology, can probably have a really good look at the way in which he goes about his cricket if they're going to succeed in the final two test matches.
Mm-hmm. I see. Just before you go, Johnny, of course, just want to turn our attention quickly to the possible construct of the T20 squad. As you know, England will be in the Caribbean for the World Cup, which is going to be in June. And any you think it's going to be a pretty simple team to pick, or it's going to be difficult?
Yeah, I think England, after the World Cup was a complete disaster. I mean, I've never seen anything like it, to be honest. And England, actually, if they pulled their fingers out halfway through the tournament, might well have got through to the latter stages. There were opportunity missed, no doubt about that. They're off the back of a very good win on Australia. You know, winning in Australia a world tournament was fairly extraordinary, largely thanks to some you know, again, Ben Stokes was in really good form in that tournament, and they got through some gutsy games. I would imagine a fairly similar squad, actually, to go World Cup in the West Indies. I think Phil Salt, of course, who went really well in the T20 series in the West Indies very recently, just for Christmas. I'm sure he'll be a big part of that squad. The likes of Will Jacks will come back into play. I think they'll have a good look at who's gone well in the IE20 and the SA20 as well. But I think, you know, the big guns that you didn't see in the Caribbean will definitely come back. So you have the Ben Stokes will be restored to that lineup. Mm-hmm. Of course, Jos Butler, captain, Mark Wood will come back into that side. But I think actually, you know, England will be very, very competitive in the Caribbean. They won, of course, back in 2010, which was an amazing win under the likes of sort of Kevin Peterson, Paul Collingwood captain on that occasion. Graham Swan played a key role on that side. Ryan Sidebottom, of course, the star of the show, cleaning up Australia in the finals. So they'll have very, very good memories, especially a lot of that management side were involved in that tournament way back in 10. They've got a chance, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So you think it's going to be a pretty easy squad to select then, basically?
Yeah, I think it'll be a combination of the names that we saw that performed in the last T20 World Cup in Australia with you know the bolters, if you like. I mean, Harry Brook, I think, will be a key part of that side. Mm-hmm. You can see Phil Salt making an assault on that side. So David Milan will be looking over his shoulder. He hasn't played in any England colours since the World Cup. He's got a central contract, and of course he's got an incredible T20 record, so he might well be in and around that squad. But I think you'll see, you know, Besto as well. I think you'll still see him there, but you're not going to see that. I don't think the likes of Jason Roy missed out on the World Cup. He hasn't really been in and around England squads recently, not since he lost selection just prior to that World Cup. But I think, you know, Mark Wood should be fit and firing, and the likes of Gus Atkinson will be in that side. Mm-hmm. And Reece Topley, back from injury, has had a really good run in the SA20. He's bowled really well in that competition. I expect him to feature. And Liam Dawson as well. He's picking up wickets, the left armer. But I think you'll see a lot of the faces that have been in and around white ball cricket for England very successfully, apart from that miserable World Cup across the last 5 or 6 years.
Well, Johnny, I want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and talking to us. And we hope to have you again soon. Let's hope that you come to the Caribbean for the World Cup. Are you coming, Johnny?
Good question. To be honest, it depends. I'm in Nepal. I fly to Kathmandu in about 10 days' time. I'm then off to India after that in Rajkot for the Saurashtra Premier League, which I think may well clash with the World Cup. But I'd love to get across either to New York or ideally back to Barbados would be nice. It's been a while.
Yes, I know you love Barbados. Somebody told me you've got some land in Barbados. Is that right, Johnny?
Not yet. One day. Absolutely.
Soon. All right. Thanks very much for coming and talking to some Mason and guests. Enjoy your night.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Good. The noted journalist, Johnny Moran, of course, looking at India and England, well, and offering his perspective in terms of a possible squad as far as England for the T20 World Cup, which is going to be in the Caribbean, the finals set for June the 29th in Barbados. When we come back, we go regional, and of course, Mason and guests brought in association with our very good friends at ASFE White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ESA. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, well, the regional tournament has started. In fact, we're into round 3, which will get on the way tomorrow. No doubt we want to have a look at what has happened so far. Vinil Corwell, who is very much with the leeward side, has joined us. No doubt he's the chief cook and bottle washer, has been around for quite a long time. He's going to offer his perspective. Of course, Roland Holder is with us. I know he's been traveling all about the place, making sure that everything is good in terms of those venues. I think there were one or two inspections. I don't know what part of the world is possibly could be in Guyana. We want to look at that as well. A little bit later on, we hope to be joined by Chris Darren, who, by the way, has got a big job with Broward County. He is going to be with us a little bit later on. But without any further ado, let me say hello to someone who can certainly give an overview of what has happened so far in the competition, Basil Butcher Jr. Hello, Basil. Nice to see you.
Good evening, Andrew. Good evening to the panel and to your listeners.
Right. Now, give us an overview of what has happened so far in the regional tournament.
I've been spending most of my time watching that Guyana play, but I've made sure I've checked in on the other matches for periods of time, because I'm more looking. I'm not concerned about who wins and loses, to tell you the truth. That's not my interest. My interest is to see what young players that we have coming through. When I watched Jamaica play, I saw they have two young, exciting fast bowlers in OJ Shields and Brian, I think his name is. Mm-hmm. I think those are two young prospects that we can have a look at. Leeward Islands with their youngster, Louis, the opening batsman, who scored 2 centuries against Guyana. Well, I want to see more because I, I'm not impressed with that Guyanese attack at all.
No.
So I want to see more. And of course, your young Wickham from Barbados, I think he did a good job thus far. I see Solazano looking solid for Windward Islands.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see much of Trinidad play, so I can't really comment on Trinidad. But those are some of the performances I've seen thus far in the tournament. I must say, I love the Kensington wicket at the Kensington Cricket Club.
Mm.
It was a wonder to have a wicket in the Caribbean where the bowler and the batter has an you put something there, something gives some help to the bowler.
Mm.
If bat well, you can score runs and so on. So it was good to see that rather than these flat, dead, low, slow tracks that we're usually accustomed to seeing in these regional tournaments.
Well, the only thing about it is that the Barbados fast bowlers were not able to exploit it as they should really, because the reality is you can see that Shamar Hold is, very suspect in terms of, I suppose because he's had an injury and we didn't see him go flat out. That's understandable. I think Barbados has got a problem with their third seam. I don't think that Primus is fit enough, really. But the problem with Barbados is that they want to play that extra batsman. And, I've said for a long time, we tend to devalue bowling. And with, someone like a Jordan, who's just thereabouts, one of the luckiest cricketers in the world, in my view, Jordan. There's some cricketers who just sneak in. He's just thereabouts. And Barbados really and truly making a big mistake, in my view, not playing their fastest bowler in McAllister. But let's go to
on that, Andrew.
Yes.
Before you continue, and I'd like Philo and Dr. Ford to chime in on this because you guys are from Barbados.
Yes.
Do you guys feel that Barbados is more focused on winning, are hell bent on winning more so than development and balancing that between winning and development?
Well, just before Philo comes in, well, if they were looking at winning, and developing cricketers, then they wouldn't pick Dulwich. That's just a sneaky comment. I mean, they picked Dulwich, didn't they? Huh? Okay, yes, Philo. The question is to you, Philo. Did you hear the question, my brother?
Yes. Hello, you're muted.
Philo, you're muted.
I didn't hear the question. Sorry, Andrew.
Mr. Butcher?
The question that Martin asked about Barbados.
Yes, yes.
The question you asked about Barbados,
yes,
cricket.
Yes,
Andrew,
yes.
Our selection of Barbados squad is not balanced.
No.
You see, no, selectors, I don't think they got it right.
No.
You're gonna get batters in first class cricket that can bat properly. Andrew, when you look at Barbados 1, 2, 3, they're struggling.
Mm.
I would like to face Jordan right now at my age, because he can't bowl a short ball. But this is a matter of end of 2 West Indies tours and 2 A team tours. And I can't understand why I haven't seen the improvement from Jordan. You know, everybody said he bowls an immaculate line and immaculate life and he bowls this beautiful delivery. I was watching the cricket. I don't see a lot of beautiful deliveries. Mm. And I think that when you're looking at what West Indies has just done in Australia, I would like to ask the coach, why is McAllister being overlooked?
Mm.
And is it something that we're missing, that we're not seeing, that this young man has not improved, or he's just not being selected because you're trying to put a number 6 in that will give you some runs and maybe bowl properly? I'm disappointed in Primus as well, Andrew. I'm a big Primus fan. I was in Trinidad with Primus playing down there, and I was impressed. Even nicknamed himself Jack Callis, which is a big title.
Mm.
And when I saw Primus in Jamaica, I was surprised.
Yeah.
Because this is a man a couple of years last year that you said was going off to India. He did wonderfully well in a couple of games, and people were looking at him. So how could you allow yourself to become the way you are and expect to produce? You cannot produce at the first-class level if you don't prepare properly.
Mm.
I keep hearing the coaches say we prepared well and everything, but I'm going to look at our biggest team playing in that 11. I don't think they're prepared. Our battle is woefully bad. Woefully bad.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no, when you try to speak to some of them, they don't even tell you to look into it. kind of stuff. I don't know if it's a crystal ball they're looking into, but it don't seem to listen to the people that have an understanding about Barbados cricket or first class cricket. To win, Basil, you have to play a proper cricket for 4 days.
Right.
We've played 2 4-day games, about 3 days. The loss to the Windward Islands will hurt us in a big way. You have to commend the Windward Islands for how they played the cricket. They were the right conditions well in the, at the last venue, and they outplayed us. They bowled us out for 214. They batted. Then when the team closed the first day, 100 and something runs before loss. You're coming back the second day, look at the chase letter. And then our tactics again. Our tactics again are not skillful enough. When you're a West Indies captain, you got to look on top of the situation a little better than the ordinary, the normal first-class cricketers. When you play a cricket for West Indies and you come and play first-class cricket in the region, you have to stamp your authority. You have to look the part as an international cricketer. That's what the people are looking for you. And I don't see it in the Barbados setup. We can't tell who's the international cricketers in our setup. They don't even look the part. The whole mannerisms are gone. We have a selector traveling on tour. What is he seeing? A senior man in Barbados cricket experience now. What is he seeing that we could be so inconsistent? What is the role? What is the role that they're playing up here? And I'm very disappointed, Andrew, because when you look at Barbados cricket, Barbados, you keep boasting about our structure, and we have this and we have the next. But when you see us playing, not what the authorities are saying, something is lacking in that side, and I don't know what it is. I think that Dowridge, too, is batting too low. I don't think I much batted before Dowridge. If you're in the squad and you're playing for the heart and soul of Barbados. Whatever else is happening on the outside, you can't bring it onto your cricket, into the cricket. If you can bring it into the cricket, them you don't want to play. But I see Dowridge being tentative again. It's just quite sad. You know, because if he's selected to play for Barbados, he has to go there and play wholeheartedly for Barbados.
I see.
And I don't see it. And it burns, you know what I mean? And I hope that these guys can really knuckle down and play this last game against Jamaica with some instinct and intent to win, because Jamaica are struggling. I'd like to leave Jamaica at least with 2 wins and a defeat, no reassessment. And then go to wherever they have to go to finish this, the competition. But as of from your point, I don't think Barbados has done that well and pick a squad that can win, because we're not playing proper cricket. It's imbalanced. We need to find the right balance. And that's why I like about selectors. When selectors get the balance right, you see the team gelling, you see things happening. There is an imbalance in Barbados cricket, and I hope they can sort it out by tomorrow in order to move forward.
Philo, good point you're making when we come back. We got Ben Cornwell, who's going to talk about the success of the Leewards, and those two Louis boys are doing very well. In fact, Origins in Dominica, remember the last time I went to St. Kitts, I actually had a wonderful Dominican dinner in St. Kitts with his family. Lovely, lovely, lovely guy, Jeremiah Louis, and his brother has made 2 centuries. And of course, when we come back, we will hear from Mr. Cornwall as to this young man. I'm sure he's going to be giving us some insights. But just before we take the commercial break, the Barbados team is struggling, but if they're going to look at bringing a batsman in, number 12 is McAllister and number 13 is Cumberbatch. I hardly think they will replace them, you know, in the side in terms of batting. So you're right, Philo, the construct of the Barbados team, not right at all. That's Balls for Business Calls, Mason and Guest, brought in association with our very good friends at ASFE, where rum the best shot of the day.
ASFE, white rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ESA is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 da, pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ESA is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
Mr. Cornwall, you are in yellow. No, they've got political implications with that color. In Barbados, of course, it's the color of the DLP. And I note with interest that my good friend Ralph Thorne is now wearing a yellow, very, very lovely yellow tie. Hello to Ralph Thorne, who's, of course, been on the show before. We want to congratulate him from there and from far, the new political leader of the Democratic Labour Party. Hello, Mr. Cornwall. Are you political?
Not at all, not at all. I just believe in politicians do the right thing for the people.
All right. Well, all. Wonderfully said. And by the way, he's from Antigua, a place where he had the land of the birds, then it was the land of the Spencers, and now it's the land of the Browns. Now, talk to me, Mr. Cornwall. How has your side performed so far? Roland Holder's waiting as well. How do they perform?
I just want to say good evening to your panel. Good evening to the panel, and thanks for having me again. As you know, we started our first encounter against the Western Youth Academy. We didn't play our best cricket. And I think that was a wake-up call for us. At least we lose some players to West Indies commitment and give us a chance to bring in some young players and see where they're at. You're going to lose games, Andrew, in regional cricket. I mean, and it's a transition period for the Caribbean in terms of bringing two youngsters. And we have a talk, we visit our plans, and we execute them well in training, and then we come up against the Happy Eagles, and then it's a different contrast. We put up a very good showing against them. In spite of an agreement with Mr. Butcher, said that he's not pleased with Guyana bowling. He must tell him that Guyana bowling is a good bowling too. Mm. You have Pamal, you have Sinclair, who plays test cricket. You have the young kid coming back from the Under-19 World Cup. So he's a very damn good team, the Guyana, but just that, just the team who played well on the day too. Mm. You know what I mean? The young kid played well, which is Louis. He batted there for a guy who, for anyone who make a century in both innings, that person have to look at and be doing something special, in my view.
Tell us about this young man. Tell us, he's what, age 22 now? His brother's Jeremiah Louis. Yeah. Tell us about him.
Well, he's an individual that really hungry for success and always run in and around the franchise from age group under 19 coming through. And, you know, he turned. He always be at training. He never, from the time he leave college, he never set foot on a job. He just always want to come and practice with us. And we engage him and make sure that his skills being nurtured in the right way. And he get the opportunity and he grab it with both hands. One of the things I like about young Louis is the way how he prepared to leave some balls to early on in his innings. And prepared to be very watchful and mindful of certain deliveries, and then he can make that conversion into to stepping up his game.
All right, Roland Holder, what part of the world are you, Roland? What part of the world are you, Roland?
Mm-hmm. Good evening, Andrew. Good evening, listeners. I'm actually in Guyana.
Ooh.
For a little bit longer, leave Guyana tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. So what are you doing in Guyana, Roland?
Actually part of the inspection team with the World Cup venues, practice venues and match venues. Mm-hmm. So just going through that with Andy Atkinson.
So you started what, in Guyana? Have you gone to any other territories?
We've just started, so we start Guyana, then we... Tomorrow we are in Trinidad and we go to all the World Cup venues.
Now, what do you look for in terms of inspection? You're in Ghana, you're leaving, you said tomorrow. What do you really look for? Can you tell me?
Well, each of the venues had a program that they were expected to complete based on the previous visits. So when the venues were visited, the core samples were taken, etc. And the core samples would have guided Andy and Kent in designing a work plan for that venue. So we are just following up on that work plan, on how the progress is, how far they've gotten, some of the venues committed to doing certain things. So we're just following through on those plans to see where they're at, mm-hmm. what the progress is, and what needs to be done. If those work plans need to be revisited and revised and updated, etc.
So Guyana passed the test?
It's not a pass or fail, Andrew. It's you look at where they are currently and you assess them against where they should have been, and you look to see what has to be done going forward to ensure that we get the best facilities in terms of pitches and outfields for the World Cup.
Let me put it another way. Having seen Ghana, are there any concerns?
Presently, no, Andrew.
Mm. So you're very short with your answer there, Roland.
Well, you want me to say yes then? You want me to say no? Well, either way, sure. Except presently, we don't have any concerns.
But you know, people say these things, and then Basil Butcher, who is a Guyanese, you never know. Because I think it's one of my concerns. I hope that things certainly work out. But these practice facilities, I really hope that they can be up to speed. I note with interest a lot of work being done at the Weymouth Ground. I see people there from as early as 5 o'clock in the morning when I'm jogging. Lots of mold there, and I hope that they can get this venue at Weymouth ready in time. Do you suspect that perhaps there may be one or two challenges with the practice facilities, the practice venues, Roland?
All the venues
have been given a work plan. There's a scope of works that they are currently following.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on what is happening, when the visit is done, we'll be in a better position to make an assessment. We are March, April, May. We are 12 weeks, give or take, away from teams having to use some of these facilities. So it is work in progress, and we will keep monitoring.
No, just before Dr. Ford comes in, we're going to come back to you, Mr. Cornwall, in a minute. Basil, if you've got any questions, please jump in. So from Ghana, you go where next, you said? Where next are you going?
Go to Trinidad.
You're going to Trinidad. When are you coming to Barbados?
I'm in Barbados, I believe. The inspection in Barbados is on Monday, I believe.
All right, on Monday. All right, so let's hope that things work out. Just before my good friend Dr. Ford comes in terms of the regional tournament, is there any selector traveling to watch these games? Do you know?
There's selectors at the games, yes.
All right, Doctor? Any questions for Roland Holder?
Up and on, Roland.
Up and on.
Roland, I don't know if this is in your wheelhouse, but I was interested with the request for proposal for the party stand and Cricket West Indies looking for an entity to provide management and operation services. And it said actually one or more. So my real question is, what's the likelihood of just one entity running the party stands, or is it more likely that an entity from each location would run the party stands for the tournament?
That, Doc, I actually cannot help you with. Can pass you on to the head of commercial, I believe, who may be responsible for that area and would be behind,
one
of the key persons behind.
Yeah. That can happen. Okay, so Roland, what's the plan? You're in Ghana. Do you have to actually visit each of the countries that will be hosting to carry out the same assessment in each country? And what's the rollout of that going to look like?
So yes, we've started formally today in Guyana. We did the venues here in Guyana. Then tomorrow we go into Trinidad and start the work there. As soon as we get there, Trinidad, visit Brian Lara, Queen's Park, Huey Speck, Diego Martin, all the venues that are, whether it is match or practice venues. So like I said to Andrew earlier, each venue was given a work plan and they have a scope of works, whether it is just doing small work to the square, whether it is taking off the top and freshening it up, whether it is top dressing, whatever it is they had to do, just to ensure that the work is being done, it is being done properly and accurately, and to continue in that vein.
Let's say for theoretical discussion that you go to a venue and there's some deficit in areas that you're concerned about. What's the framework and for actually rectifying deficits and making sure that everything is on target?
Well, there we know how much time. So, for example, grass takes X amount of time to grow. If you need to have, if you're redoing your surface and you need your roots to filter right through to ensure that your the pitch body is strong and the root system is strong and able to support what you're doing. So if you don't have grass planted with 6 weeks to go, then you're in trouble. And then that is a different discussion as to if you are 12 weeks out and you're now planting grass, etc. So based on what is being done and where they are presently, that will guide where we go at the next step. That guides what is the next step. If everybody's on course, because in reality, you can get interruptions. It's work. Rain will affect the work because they're certainly, depending on what you're doing with the square, you need dry conditions. So water would affect it. Any number of things can affect it. So it is to see and assess exactly where you are and then go from there.
What's the biggest challenge that you've seen so far, just from the few areas you've been able to visit? What do you think we need to work on a bit more, or do you think everything is going well?
So far, we've only, like I said, we've literally just started in Guyana, and the work here is going pretty well. They could at times do it some more manpower at one or two of the venues, but outside of that, the work here is going pretty well.
Is there a budget for like rectifying, for getting more manpower if you need it though, or is that a local thing, or is that a local thing?
It's a local thing. You can either use manpower or more machines. So that one way or another, it's a decision that would be made by the various governments, etc. So, or you can share the machines across the venues, and not each facility doesn't have to have its own set of mechanization. So you can share the machines, etc., to ensure the work is done pretty quickly and effectively.
So then, Dr. Four, there's a concern, manpower. Roland?
I think you meant Roland, or
I'm telling you. I'm telling you. You can tell it to Roland.
Oh, you're telling me. Okay.
Yeah. Roland.
Have a shortage of individuals in the region that have a capacity to work.
Roland,
there's no shortage of people. if at a particular site, there may be a need for more manpower or machinery that can be done. Certainly the machinery makes the work easier. So that is an option, as you know. Those are options that are available to you. The manpower may take a little longer, mechanization will do it a little quicker. So there are options available. I wouldn't say it's a concern. If you're going to use manpower, you just need to recognize that you need more persons. If you use machines, you'll need less persons. It's just that one way or the other.
Well, Roland's a dry season, and I can tell you, I really hope that things work out at Weymouth, because a lot of soil, maybe I shouldn't say good, but I hope that things work out for them. You know, you need rain, and there can be some big cracks, and, you know, our local season starts around May, and you know, we've not had rain in a while in Barbados, and this is a dry season, so that could be of some concern. Basil, any questions for your good friend Roland Holder?
No, I was going to ask him a question, but he answered it, because I was listening to the an interview with the director of cricket recently did. Where the question was asked about, you know, the whole issue about the pitches in the Caribbean. And what was interesting, he said, based on the research they have done, they realized that a lot of pitches, they were putting too much clay and so on. So it's a whole, so what I found astounding by that is that, why wasn't this way a long time ago and figured out? That it's now been figured out, and those are the things that can be put in place in pitch preparation. And he said one of the things coming out of this World Cup, that one of the legacies is to see better quality pitches because of the new guidelines that they're using. But Roland already established about, you know, the taking off dirt and so on and so forth. So he covered the question. So, thank you.
Okay. Just before we come back to you, Mr. Cornwall, because I want to look at some of the performances. I was looking at some of the stats there in terms of, you know, Cornwall doing well. Some of your batsmen, Louis, gotten them on the runs. And a big game coming up for you tomorrow. Let's go to Jamaica and speak to the noted journalist Jerome Foster, because we want to get a perspective in relation to what's happening in Jamaica. Hello, Jerome. How are you?
Yeah, good afternoon, Andrew. Well, it should be evening now. Nice to be on the program as usual.
All right. No, you've been watching the cricket there in Jamaica. Are you happy? The standard is high. Thousands of people coming to Sabina Park.
You have a lot of optimism there. Not a lot of people, obviously. Last week was a holiday weekend because of, well, for schools, because of the Ash Wednesday holiday, public holiday. But they didn't have a large turnout at either Sabina Park or Kensington Cricket Club. But in terms of the standard of the cricket, it's not much different from what we have seen over the years. What I can say is that the pitches have been better, is that you have quality surfaces, so you're not seeing the games finishing inside two days because of high-level spin. It's more the inefficiency of the batters to cope with seamers, especially the first game at Sabina Park where the Volcanoes really destroyed the Scorpions with John Ryan, John and Shamar Springer. And then even at Kensington, where you had some grass on the pitch for the first couple of days, the Bayesians didn't cope so well.
No.
Springer and John. So it's more, to me, I've seen better pitches. Obviously, there's been a lot discussed about the outfield, and we here in Jamaica can understand why the discussions have been like that, because they have been very poor. I don't think the Chedwin Park outfield is poor. It's just that one day a ground staff left a hose running for over 12 hours, which resulted in that waterlogged
situation. And that hose was underground, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was underground. So it's normally in the sprinkler, but the sprinkler, I think something went wrong with the sprinkler, and he left the hose running for 12 hours. So that's why that waterlogged situation ensued.
He left the hose running for 12 hours.
Yeah, so it was left on.
Is he still in the job?
Yes, he does have the job.
Oh, so you went very low there when I asked the question. Is he still working?
He's still working. He's still part of the ground staff.
So the answer is yes.
He just came across as a human error. That is what was told.
I see. And Kensington, I saw. Did you see the video of Kensington Park there in Jamaica? Did you see the video?
Yeah, I was actually there. I was actually the one who asked Busbert about it. He actually gave me those responses, saying that it's not up to standards, etc. He was very disappointed, actually, because some of the players weren't really interested in going on the field to train prior to the start of the game. Yeah, because the surface was very dry, very hard, bouncy, and a lot of patches of dirt. So it wasn't smooth with grass. So it was a little bit of a problem to some of the players at the time. Hence, he had that frustrating comment, or the frustrating comment.
Okay. Now, have you seen any batsmen that caught your eye? Or bowler?
I would say Ryan John and Shamar Springer. I think Springer has gotten a touch quicker.
Yes.
The last time I've seen him, he has gotten a lot faster. He's bowling in the mid-80s, based on my estimation. I'm not the greatest with these things, but he looks as if he's getting onto the batters a little bit quicker. In terms of the batting, I think Jeremy Solazano, he's looked accomplished. And, of course, Kevin Wickham. I watched some of his innings, and he's much talked about, and I guess everybody in Barbados would know about him, but he looks like someone for the future. The only problem with it, I think he's been forced by the poor showing of the top order to really be the one that
Yes.
So he's not really, he's almost coming as a repairman rather than the man that he's supposed to kick on the issue.
Yes.
You know from what he has.
He's coming to a crisis. He's coming to a crisis. He's coming to a crisis. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
The Barbados captain can't buy a run. What's going on with him, though? The last Phil Wallace, you know, he's a technician a little bit later on about Craig Bathurst's batting. So overall then, the standard is reasonable, 5 out of 10, 6 out of 10, Jerome, can you tell me?
I would say, based on the four teams that I've seen so far, I'd probably go 6, because I don't think the CCC team is strong enough. Mm. I think the team needs another experienced batter, and it needs an experienced bowler. I was impressed by Zishan Mutar, actually, but outside of Brooks and Carton, Brooks didn't get many in the second game against Jamaica. The rest of the batting is a little bit one-dimensional. It seems as if they weren't training for four-day cricket.
I see.
They look overly aggressive, as if it's a remnant of the Super 50, because most of these players are part of the Super 50 team. But they didn't practice enough with red ball, and you can see it in terms of their deficiency.
Mm. Do you think the CCC should be in the competition? That's the question. I'll ask Basil Butcher that as well.
It has been a very touchy topic for some people. But to be quite honest, I would say yes. But if they're going to be in it, they have to be able to train for the full year. They can't be training 3 weeks before the four-day competition.
Mm.
When the professional teams have been training for 3-4 months, you're not going to be able to compete efficiently. You can see the talent is there, but they have to be playing consistently, because I think what Cricket West Indies is trying to do is bridge that gap between the players who move on from under-19 cricket and get lost in the system. But if you're going to do it, you have to find an organized way to maintain the standard. So you can't be just sending out applications for cricketers to send in their resume to play. I think you have to have a more detailed manner as to how you go about it. Because the team, you can just sense that once Carter or Brooks gets out.
Yes, that's it. That's it. That's it.
It's going to be all over, yeah.
Mm. I see. You're right about that. Well, Jerome, I want to thank you. By the way, have you seen any West Indian selector?
No, I've seen the coach. I saw him at two of the games.
And the coach, this is the batting coach, Jimmy?
Well, no, the test coach. I've seen Andre Coney.
Oh, okay. Andre, but you haven't seen a West Indian selector?
No, I haven't seen Dr. the Honorable Desmond Haynes, and I haven't seen... Well, he's the lead selector now.
Mm.
But I haven't seen.
Have they replaced Roland Butcher? Anybody knows?
No, because what they had said is that it's going to be after the review panel in June.
Mm.
So you're going to get that assistant selector or new selectors in June after the World Cup, I presume. Because I think what was said is that the lead selector, as well as the coaches, will be directing the selection of the teams going forward. We have the series before the World Cup, either way.
Mm. So you haven't seen the Honorable Desmond Haynes then in Jamaica?
No, he probably came and I didn't see him, but I've been at Sabana Park for all the days.
You didn't see him. Cornwall, don't run in your yellow shirt there. Have you seen a West Indies selector?
I have.
Hmm?
Yeah, Desmond Haynes is down by our end.
Oh, he's with you. Wonderful. Have you spoken to him?
Briefly.
Mm. What did you tell him? Did you tell him that Jeremiah Lowe should play for the West Indies?
Well, no. To be honest, no. I was asking him why Casey Carty batted number 5, I think, in the last game in Australia when he makes 4 runs in at number 3.
Yes. That was a good point. Very good question as well. Very good question. Just before you go, Mr. Cornwall, because I know that you enjoy St. Kitts, you've got house and land there. Your overall assessment of the Leewards, tell us about some of the big players. You talked about Louis, but tell us about some of the other cricketers. And are you happy generally with the standard of the Leewards cricket?
Well, yeah, I think Leewards been going through for some time now, a transition and a process where bringing through young cricketers. And young under-19 cricketers, and I want to commend our board, the franchise, to see it fit to give these young guys the opportunity to come to St. Kitts, even though they're not a part of the franchise, to start to get their skills up to par for the demands of 40 cricket and even Super 50. Hence, prepare guys for the under-19 as well. It's a feeder program we try to establish here. in the franchise. So I think we have a lot of senior players who've been playing for quite a while now, and they're making their experience felt around the franchise, and that is something good. We're not looking for quick fix or overnight fix for Chai for think that we are top of regional cricket yet. It's work in progress for us, but I can tell you that we're not going to lie down and give teams win like that. We're going to fight.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. Well, I really want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. I know that you're always available, and we hope to have that young Louis, both of them, coming to show sometime in the very, very near future. Thanks to you, Mr. Cornwall.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Let me just say hello to Mr. Cornwall.
Okay,
it's been
a while
since I've seen you.
Yes.
I know Mr. Cornwall from coming over to the U.S. and playing in the MAC T20.
That must have been a long time ago. That's back in 1920. All right, well, thanks.
Not so long.
You know, I'm always very cheeky.
That we started the MAC T20, right?
That's right.
The originals.
Yes, we've been through that.
Right.
Yes, sir.
All right. We're going to pause for business
calls. Nice hearing you, Basil.
We're going to pause for business calls when we come back. The question, should the CCC be in the regional competition? That's the question for you, Basil. That's the question for my good friend, Fellow Wallace. And, of course, I wouldn't ask Roland Holder that at all, but I've got some other questions for him. And the lines are open, 4417 90. The program, of course, brought in association with our very good friends at ASF White Rum, the best shot of the day.
ASAP White Rum. If anybody feel they could drink with me, let them come. Open your mouth, drink it up, or you can't qualify to sing this song. Tell me, bartender, ASAP is the best shot of the day. Boy, pa 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 da 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 pa 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 da da. Say what you want, ASAP is the best shot of the day. Is the best shot of the day.
All right, just before Jerome Foster goes, Jerome, so overall, you said 5 out of 10. The action continues tomorrow. Barbados up against, of course, the Jamaicans. Tell us a bit about this young Shields, because I know with interest Basil was talking about him. He's got some ability, you think, young Shields?
Well, I wouldn't say young, but I think he's 28.
He's, youngish.
He has pace. I think the problem with him is that he is, over the years, he hasn't really been able to stay fit for a long period of time. So that is part of the problem why he's not risked a lot in this format. He really put himself in the books of the selectors by coming back. He was part of the CCC before. He went to GC Foster College and so on. So he put himself back into the selectors' mind by being the fastest bowler in the country. He wasn't really taking a truckload of wickets, but he was generating good pace. And that is what really forced the hands of the selectors. So they are basically cushioning him now and guiding him and trying to get him to understand how to bowl at this level and to really build an over. Because as you can see, if you saw the last game against the CCC, even though he was quick, he was spraying the ball all over the place and he wasn't concentrating in terms of being consistent. And a couple of times that he got it on the stump, he was able to dismiss a few. So he's one that you can actually think about going forward if he can stay fit. And that is a big issue for us.
I see. Well, Jerome, thanks for coming through and talking to us. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
No problem, Andrew.
All right. Now, let's come to my good friend, Philo. CCC, do you think this should be playing regional cricket? CCC, Philo, can you tell me?
Andrew, they play regional cricket. Cricket West Indies wanted to play in the pool and they're there. They've given opportunities to players who would not have made their franchise squads. But I agree with Jerome is that if you're going to bring CCC into the 4-day cricket, you need to give them all the opportunities available to them to have a better structure and better coaching plan. Now, I would like to know if Ronald Florifa has gone up to Jamaica to help. Because seeing that he was in our Australia white ball squad, and he's part of that CCC setup. Maybe his presence up there would also help. I think it's Edward Collins, I think, and Robert Samuels, because I've represented UWI as well, and you don't want to see a UWI side that's not competitive. I believe they have talent, but again, it's how you get that talent together and blend that academic and sports. It's something that's been tried before. And in these telling times, Andrew, is even going to call for a lot more structure and better planning. But they're there, and they have to work with what they have and try to, and that's where management and coaching comes in, to try to get these young men to understand how tough it is to play a four-day cricket. It's not going to a class or sitting down for 2 hours and opening a book and listening to a lecture. It's about deciphering different types of approaches and what the bowlers are looking to do, and building and working out players, and building innings and working out players and batters. And that is something that they need to learn quickly. If not, they're going to hold some tap. And if they hold tap, you know they're going to be demoralized. But Jonathan Carter, Shamar Brooks, and all the coaching staff, they got a big task on their hands to try to keep the CCC period focused for a very long time, because there's only 3 games starting tomorrow, and then they have some more games to play. So they need to try and buckle up. People are going to be calling to chop their heads off, but I think it's just to give the young guys who are in that setup an opportunity to play first class cricket. And we're hoping that we would have seen some bad horses. You look at Motara, he's one that you can have, you know, he would not have played any first class cricket if it wasn't for the CCC. So you have to give them, you have to say thank to them for exposing him. I hope that he can move from strength to strength and force his way into the Barbados setup. I know there's also Lee Cocker, there's also there waiting on the outside. But at least it's good to have players competing for positions in at the regional level. I'm glad that CCC, I've seen the opportunity, but they need to obviously have better planning, Andrew. Mm-hmm. Be competitive.
Mm-hmm. Basil, CCC.
I would echo what Philo said. It has to be a very structured program, because you can't just piece together a team a month or so before a competition. These guys haven't played with each other and so on, and then they got to go up against guys who are practicing year round and so on. It's a disservice to them, and then fans looking from outsiding and saying, we wasting time with these guys looking how they're getting beat up. But they don't have all the resources around them. So that's something they need to do. Because look, in England, they used to have Oxford and Cambridge used to play in the first class competition, right? We could replicate that, but we got to have a more structured program around the CCC for them to compete.
Mm-hmm. Roland, what's the thinking in relation to having the CCC in the competition?
CCC is part of a developmental program similar to the West Indies Academy.
Mm-hmm.
In the competition, and we are happy to have them taking part in our tournament.
I see.
I got a question for Roland.
Sure.
Roland, let's say Motara, for example, if he does wonderfully well in this competition, can CWI then put him into the academy?
Interesting.
There is a process for persons entering the academy. So if he satisfied that criteria, I'm sure he would come under consideration for entry into the academy.
Okay. Florifa is going to Jamaica or he's in Barbados?
I am not sure, Philo. The last game in Australia was perhaps late last week, I think. Takes a couple of days to get home, and you yourself know that journey is not the easiest of journeys.
Yes.
So I am actually not very sure what is. He may join the team for the after the break. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Roland, somebody's asking here if there's going to be a camp for the West Indies team just before the World Cup.
The coaches are discussing that presently. I'm sure that they will come back with, as they put their schedule together and finalize the World Cup prep. You would recognize that several of our players, probably just before the World Cup, will be taking part in the IPL, the PSL, those various tournaments. So it is to see how best the coaches can put their camp schedule and camp attendees together.
All right. Well, any final questions for Roland before he goes? I know he's a very busy man. Once you're in Guyana, lots of action in Guyana. I mean, I'm sure that Basil Butcher will tell him to maybe go. Where can he go tonight, Basil?
This is the wrong man, yeah.
There's a wonderful place on Main Street.
I don't call anymore.
So any final questions for Roland before he goes, gentlemen? All right, Roland, the weather in Guyana is okay? Weather's pretty good?
And sunny.
Bright and sunny. All right. Well, thanks, Roland. Of course, we're going to certainly talk to you again next week, because by then you would have obviously visited Trinidad and Barbados. I'm interested to hear your report as far as Barbados is, in fact, concerned. And we certainly look forward to having you on the show again sometime soon.
All right, Andrew. All right. Good night, listeners. Good night, panel.
All right, good. 4341790. Let's go to Jamaica and talk to Liam Sebastian. Of course, he is very much with the Windward side. They've done very well winning both of their matches up in Jamaica. Mr. Sebastian, you're not playing. You haven't played for a while, but certainly as a manager, you must be quite happy with the performance of the Windwards. You look as if you could win the championship. Talk to me.
Yeah, good evening to you, Andrew. Good evening to your listeners and your panelists. Yes, well, we have done well so far, and not only this year, but it's a continuation of the performance from last season where we finished second. But one of the things that we are doing, we are not looking at championship at the moment. There's still, 5 games to go. So it's a lot of cricket to be played, a long way to go still. So we're not focusing on anything too far ahead. We're just taking it day by day, session by session, and we move on as the games go on.
But two big wins, particularly against Barbados. Did you expect it? Would it be so easy against a side that is supposed to have such a great reputation, the big boys from Barbados?
Well, no. I mean, obviously, you don't come into games anticipating that you may win in 2.5 days. And the two games that we have played, we won both of them in similar fashion.
Yes.
In 2.5 days, they're both. But the two teams that we played so far, we beat them last year as well. So the confidence level going into those games is very high. So it's not a situation where times like before where you'd be playing with that fear factor, you're coming up against Barbados or Jamaica, that sort of way. We're taking it as an equal battle, and any day, the best team may win.
So there's no fear factor anymore. You know, at one stage when you go to Man United, you know, a couple of years ago, you're hoping to get a goal or finish with a draw. So you're saying that you're not afraid of Barbados anymore. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I think maybe I would say that, because it's been. I mean, I know maybe the Bajan public may not want to hear that, but it's not only Barbados. The Windward Islands team has been doing fairly well over the years, and I mean, last year we came second in the competition
and should have won. And should have won.
Session, yeah. So it's not a fluke, as you would say, and it's not something that we would say, okay, well, we play in Barbados or we play in Jamaica. We respect everybody, yes, but at the end of the day, you still have to play bat and ball, and I think that we have quality players in our setup, so that's why I don't think that there's this fear factor that we're going in scared or something like that. We think that we can match up with the teams, and as I said, on the day, with the conditions, the best team wins.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's look at that game against Barbados, certainly in terms of the performance. You won the toss, and you decided to send Barbados in. Kevin Wickham batted particularly well, 70-odd. But Barbados never got enough runs, and then you were off to a pretty good start.
Yeah, I still felt, if we've been overly critical of ourselves, that we allow Barbados maybe to get too many runs after, you know, the position that we had them in. But nonetheless, it was a very good effort from the start. We won the toss, and the fast bowlers really did a good job, as they have been doing thus far.
Mm.
So from session number one, we were in front, and we stayed in front in the entire match. So basically, you know, Barbados was basically playing catch-up.
Yes.
And
yep.
It's very difficult to to come from behind in this sort of position. So I credit must go to the team for basically bringing a killer instinct to wanting to stay in front in the entire game.
Well, Chris Darren has joined us. We're going to come to him pretty soon. But just before we go to fellow Art of Basel, this guy Ryan John, an underrated cricketer, but I think he's a good bowler. I mean, you don't hear people talking about him, but he certainly is as an important cog in your wheel.
Well, yeah, certainly. And again, it follows up his performance from last year. And I wouldn't say he's only a good bowler. He's a good all-around cricketer. He can bat as well. He has the talent to bat. What I think and what we have told him is that maybe in that situation when people are not talking about him, he now has the opportunity to put his name further out there because he had a good season last year. And so far, he's done exceptionally well. So we're just hoping that he can continue to perform and obviously. Obviously, we're hoping that at the end that he will be rewarded for his performances.
I see. Gentlemen, any questions for our good friend Liam Sebastian? Fellow or Dr. Ford?
Hi, Liam. Hi, Liam. Good evening. Good evening. My question to you is your captain, Melius. I watched the games and I thought he marched the troops quite well. And also he's formed a good partnership there with Solazano and the transformation of Jeremy's game. What has caused that?
Well, yes, and that's one of the things that Kimani has done well in the two games that he would have captained for us thus far. And as you said, the partnership with Jeremy, you know, they have that understanding with them. And I think it all goes back from the training that the team has done at the franchise base in St. Vincent. A lot of work has been put into to basically being accountable and holding players responsible for their own performances. At the end of the day, yes, cricket is a sport, but it's more of a business these days, and everybody has to be accountable for their performance. So that understanding has improved over time with the guys spending time together and also the training that they have been doing. So I think that the partnership that they have built is more of a family affair in that, you know, they spend a lot of time together and it obviously boils off and feeds off into the cricket aspect.
I see. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming through and talking to us. Always a pleasure to talk to you. You're strong. I can see the improvement in Windrush cricket. And you, where do you play again tomorrow? Where are you tomorrow?
We play at Chedwin Park against Chedwin CCC.
Have you seen the ground?
Yeah, we trained this afternoon and yesterday morning, so we have a fair idea as to the conditions and what we can expect.
And no flooding at all. The pipe is pretty good. No flooding.
No, it's good. There was a little shower this afternoon, but the flooding issue, I think that's under control.
Oh, okay. So the flooding would have come from the Joseph Nez calls it the gospel rain in Barbados, but of course I expect that the conditions would be a lot better down there at Chedwin Park. And if you win this, then you would have ended the first round of matches with three wins. You're looking forward to that, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. We hope that at the end of this, and we're hoping to play some good cricket again, that we can be on top. But as I said, we are not looking too far ahead. We have 4 days of cricket ahead of us starting tomorrow. We're hoping again to have a good start. And from then, if we can get a good start, then we hopefully can build on that and carry the momentum for the next 4 days. But we're not allowing complacency to come in. And that's one of the things that we have driven home to the boys, that yes, we have played well, but these games that we have played is in the past, so we cannot do anything to change them. We can only try to improve on them. So we're looking to come in this game against CCC to improve on these performances that we have had thus far.
What about the conditions so far? You would have played at Chedwin Park, you would have played at Kensington Park. Happy with the conditions? Facilities?
So far, to be honest, I think the credit must go to the ground staff. I think the pitches that we have played on have been equal pitches, that it gives something for everyone involved. The batters can play their shots, the bowlers can get something out of the pitch. I think so far what we have played on, credit must go to the groundsmen for that. And it's not just because we have won, but I think if you would have looked at the games, normally first-class pitches, you see a lot of spin
right. And
balls spinning and bouncing or maybe even keeping low. We haven't seen too much of that in the two games that we have played. So, in fact, our most of our, well, the majority of wickets gone to our fast bowlers. So I think people have been clamoring for faster pitches, for fast bowlers to do more work. And so far, we have seen an improvement in the pitches thus far in what we have played with.
Final question from a Barbados perspective. Tell us about Shamar Springer. He's been an important cog in your wheel. He's been a big snapper.
Yeah, I think after the Super 50 where he didn't have the best of performances, you have seen a increased hunger in his in him wanting to do well, and even when you see him on the field, he really has that energy, and I guess maybe playing against Barbados in the game motivated him a little more to do well. But he has been doing well thus far this season, and we just hope that he can continue to improve on those performances.
Well, I want to thank you, Liam, for coming and talking to us. Liam Sebastian of the Windwards, thank you very much for coming through, and we hope that you continue to do well. I'm very impressed with the Windwards. Thanks for coming on the show.
All right, thank you very much to you and everybody.
All right, it's heading to 7:30 in the country. Let's go. Let's continue to be in Jamaica. Chris Darren has joined us. Hello, Chris. Nice to see you. How are
nice
you, sir?
To see you too, but I'm not in Jamaica.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm not doing so good.
Where are you? Are you in Australia? What?
No, I'm actually in Florida. I'm in Broward County.
Yes. What are you doing there, Chris? Can you tell me?
Well, apart from the fact that my family is based here, I'm actually helping the Broward County folk in the hosting of their events here for T20 World Cup.
I see. So exactly what would you be doing?
Well, I'm a sort of general advisor. You know, you can't... You know, as I said to, you know, the commissioners up here when they were trying to get me to come on board, I said, I can't teach the Americans how to run events. This is the land of professional sports events. But in terms of the cricket culture and certain nuances of working with an ICC Cricket World Cup, I might be able to help.
I see, yes.
I'm a sort of general advisor. They've set up a... what they call the Broward County Working Group, which is, you know, I guess it's similar to what they have in Barbados, which is a national organizing committee that kind of sits over the local organizing committee that just handles everything just to make sure that Broward County gets what they have invested in, you know, and just to help them make sure they, you know, understand all the different rules, regulations, commercial, you know, issues, etc. You know, they've hosted international cricket here before. You know, they host West Indies, India,
yes,
fairly recently.
Mm-hmm.
But the major difference is that's a bilateral arrangement. That's West Indies versus India. You know, any little issue, whether it be commercial, cricket operations, whatever, you can talk to the Indian board, you can talk to the West Indies board, and you can resolve it. A Cricket World Cup is just far more complex. So how I explained it to them is that a West Indies versus India is a far bigger game. But Nepal versus Sri Lanka in the World Cup has just bigger consequences in terms of liabilities, commercial obligations, complexities, and so on. So I'm just here trying to help them walk through the raindrops.
Basil, what part of the States are you? Are you in Broward County as well?
No, I'm in Palm Beach County. A little further north.
You're a little further. Is there tremendous excitement of the World Cup in your part of the world, Basil?
I don't think so as of yet. I think the people that probably are most excited would be the South Asians, the Pakistanis, and the Indians for that match between the two in New York. The West Indies is not playing in the United States, so I don't think as West Indians we are that excited about the World Cup in the United States because our team is not playing here.
I see. Interesting. Chris, have you been asked by Cricket West Indies to help in any way?
No, but I mean, they, you know, I was on a program just recently with you.
Yes.
And, you know, Johnny Graves, they seem to have it well under control. They have people, as he says, that were experienced. And, You know, as I say to everybody, at this stage, look, it's all hands on deck. Everybody in the Caribbean needs to try and ensure that the World Cup is a success. I say that to my fellow Jamaicans. It doesn't matter that you're not hosting. At the end of the day, you know, Barbados' success is our success. Trinidad's right. success is our success. Mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. you know, the entire region is going to be paintbrushed by how well we do with again, hosting this event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they closed the ticket balloting process, you know, where, you know, you had all these applications coming in. You know, you're talking about, I think it's like 2.5 million applications that came in for tickets for the World Cup. So, you know, commercially, it's going to be a huge success. There's no question about that. Mm. What we need to ensure is that we deliver every aspect of the ICC host agreement, both in the Caribbean and in the US, and make sure we put in place things to maximize the benefits of hosting these kinds of events.
Mm. Dr. Ford? I know you were very keen on this whole business of the ticket situation. The last time you were on the show with a West Indies official CWI, you had a rather interesting discussion. Anything for Chris?
Yeah, and I saw on the Cricket West Indies website that they were saying in a few days they'll start selling tickets. So I'm going to look forward to that happening. Chris, I was looking at some of the prices here, and I heard about some of the prices in the U.S. Do you find there's a big disparity in the prices for a ticket for a game?
Mm. I have to confess, I'm not familiar with the prices for the West Indies. Simply because I've been more consumed by, you know, what is happening.
What are the prices
here?
Like up there, though?
Well, I remember the ticket prices would have been, from a ballot perspective, trying to gauge the market. They're going to start allocating those applications shortly. But the demand is such. I am surprised. And you knew it was going to happen. But even I am surprised at the type of progress and demand that has taken place with the T20 World Cup. I mean, when this thing started years ago, you know, T20 itself, the game, you know, us people who were born and raised in Test cricket, you know, you saw this thing as a gimmick. Well, this thing is now generational. So there's an entire generation that has really grown up as T20 as the form of cricket that they want to consume.
Mm-hmm.
And there are just far more of those than people who absorb and love Test cricket. That's just the reality. And so the demand for the tickets, I mean, it's just been staggering. Now, I know that there's likely to be certain elements there of scalping and so on and secondary market. But all you have to do is look on what the secondary ticket prices were in the last Cricket World Cup in India. You know, and I know it's India and I know it's 1.5 billion people and cricket is a religion. But a ticket on the secondary market, because you're now able to actually trade those tickets legally on the various websites and so on, official trading and so on for secondary market. A ticket went as high as 300,000 US to the game between India and Pakistan.
What?
That's just staggering.
300,000 US.
What? That's officially, Andrew. Officially.
Mm.
So I can only imagine what unofficially, what other sort of trades took place with hospitality tickets and so on. It's staggering. But I do know that I was offered 10,000 US by an Indian fan right outside the cricket stadium in Johannesburg for the final. Mm. When I was walking in with my ICC pass, I also casually made a joke about it. And he was offering me 10,000. Mm. And then people saw him offering me the money and jumped in. And if I'd stayed there for a bidding war, who knows where that would have gone.
Mm.
And so people need to appreciate it. People in the Caribbean, I think, need to appreciate when these tickets become available for sale, you better buy them.
Mm.
Especially, you know, if you come to the second stage, you know, and a West Indies is playing against an India and so on. it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of excitement. I certainly believe that now. And even here in the US, the demand for the tickets has been incredible. Obviously, the ones in New York where, you know, India, Pakistan. But, you know, even the ones here abroad, you know, we're very likely to have sold out stadia based on those applications. Obviously, there's a percentage that will drop out once you pay. It's now time to pay. But we're very likely to have sold out stadiums for all the matches long before the event, which is unprecedented.
Ooh.
Mm. What do you see as the legacy for cricket in the USA from having this event there? Being co-host.
Well, I don't even see it as a legacy, you know. It's a no.
Mm.
They are living the legacy of the investment made years ago. So remember, they would have built their stadium here in Broad in 2007. And they would have been rejected. Remember, they had actually bid to host matches in the 2007 World Cup. But they went ahead, we rejected them, we didn't assign them any matches, but they went ahead, built the stadium with a view that they saw where cricket was going in the United States. And in Broad, it is a heavy Caribbean community, and so that might have been the original impetus. But then as we've seen with Major League Cricket, with, you know, the American Cricket League, with the U.S. Open and so on. There are over 400 cricket leagues in the U.S. There are over 200,000 registered cricketers in the U.S. The U.S. is the second most valuable television market for cricket in the world.
Mm.
So they're now exploiting that legacy. So it's not a future. And I always say to people, look, I just look and see who gets involved. To tell me, because they're far more smarter people in the world than us. You know, when I see Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, investing in Major League Cricket and, you know, buying one of the teams, when I see Mukesh Ambani, he's like the 10th richest man in the world now. He used to be like the 4th or 5th, you know, investing in Major League Cricket in the US. You see the cricket stadiums being built in Dallas and New York, and these guys know the numbers, you know, they see what is happening in the United States as far as cricket is concerned, and they're getting involved. And, you know, it's only a pity at a time when the West Indies cricket is at such a low that this is when commercially, globally has exploited. And I feel even more sorry for my own home country of Jamaica. That has, you know, virtually withdrawn from the world of cricket. And it really is in a lot of trouble there. And to see the opportunity that other countries clearly see and are able to exploit.
But are there any benefits of investing in cricket in the West Indies, as you would have outlined for the USA? Is there?
Well, look.
Is there a return for the investment? I know the scale might be different, but do you think
there's an upside to it? You only can take advantage of an opportunity if you see an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And to see an opportunity, you have to create an opportunity. So, as you know, I remember when Jamaica, you know, there was a furor in Jamaica over not bidding and so on. And, you know, one of the comments made by a call-in to one of the radio talk shows, the person said, well, look, chances are we wouldn't have gotten any good matches anyway. We wouldn't have gotten West Indies, whatever. And the person said, and maybe we would have gotten like Oman or Qatar or somebody like that. And I remember thinking, my goodness, this person has no idea about the opportunities that are involved in hosting an event of this magnitude. It's not just about being able to watch good cricket. Of course, if you're a West Indies fan, you want to see West Indies. But if you're a West Indian national, if you're a Jamaican national, you might have an interest in Qatar coming to play at Sabina Park, or Oman coming to play at Sabina Park. And at the same time, you invite the Emir of Qatar, who has a sovereign investment fund that, you know, we could use a few billion with, and we could introduce to him far more than just, say, the cricket on the field, which he's a big fan of, by the way. But it, that is how the first world, the developed world, understand and know how to utilize these events. You know, Barbados, for instance, if Barbados has not yet invited Satya Nadella to come at their expense, we're going to say their expense, you're hosting them. These guys don't need your money. They're going to fly in on their private jet anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
To come and watch games in Barbados. Now, I don't know if you guys follow Wall Street, but in November, was it November? When was the Cricket World Cup? November, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a massive crisis at Microsoft. Massive crisis. They bought ChatGPT, you know, OpenAI, and or invested in it, 13 or 14 billion US. And a couple weeks after they invested that money, Microsoft had invested in it, they fired the CEO, Sam Altman. Mm-hmm. So, of course, Microsoft and the stock market was in a tizzy. The shares were going all over the place. It was a crisis for Microsoft. Here it was, they've made this big gamble on a company that the CEO has been fired without him telling them. Nobody could find Satya Nadella, the CEO. You know where he was for 3 days that nobody could find? He was in India at the Cricket World Cup in the middle of a crisis. So much so that they now make jokes with him. Like, you know, if there's a crisis, which cricket match can we find you at around the world? No, the opportunity when you have somebody that is so enamored with the sport and we have a voice in that sport, cricket just simply becomes a communication platform. Here in Broward, I have in my Rolodex billionaires. Why? Not because I'm a little small businessman from Jamaica. It's because I was involved in cricket.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it is something that you need to understand how to exploit the opportunity, to be able to see the opportunity, to be able to take advantage of the opportunity. Barbados need to have a target list. And the truth is, I have spoken to the chairman of your NOC about that, and I promised to help him with as many people as possible. You're going to invite 1,000, and you might get 10,
mm-hmm.
but one of those is all you need. And it is all worth it, hosting the event. You know, it makes the cost of it so minuscule. As I said to somebody, look, that ticket that went for 300,000 US,
mm-hmm.
right, in India. Imagine if it went, a ticket on the secondary market, an India game in Barbados went for 100,000 US. And there were 50 of those tickets that went for 100,000 US. Somebody in the Barbados market sold it for that on the secondary market. Do you understand the impact of what's that? 5 million
mm-hmm.
US
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
coming into the economy just from that little transaction alone? How much did Barbados spend? So it's those kind of economics that we just don't understand. And we're very good at hosting events. We're superb hosts, I believe. In fact, when I was doing a funny story, when I was doing a presentation to all the Broad folk and, you know, ICC guys were there, and, you know, all the newbies that are involved and so on. And once somebody made a comment that we need to, you know, read the events manual, the minimum standards manual and so on of the ICC, and this will help guideline. And I had to point out to them that, yeah, we're familiar with it because we wrote it in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
The ICC didn't have one before we wrote it and developed it and gave it as a gift, basically, to the cricket world, that this is how to run global cricket events. And they took that, adopted it. It's updated now, you know, different specifications and standards and so on have changed. But it's the same basic idea of creating minimum standards and so on. So, you know, we have a role to play in the world of cricket still, a very powerful role to play. We still have a lot of goodwill out there. You know, when I put Brian Lara on the phone the other day with one of the Indian billionaires who's an investor in Major League Cricket, and the guy, you know, nearly fainted. You know, so, you know, this is somebody who commands boardrooms around the world, and here it is, he's he's like a jellyfish in front of Brian Lara on the phone, you know. And it's like all of us. We all turn to children before our heroes. I'll never forget, I had to host in Barbados Gary Sobers and a whole pile of dignitaries and so on. But Sobers was sitting right immediately to my left. And I had to give a speech. It was lunchtime and Sada stood up at the table and I gave a little speech and so on. And my wife said to me, "What's wrong with you?" Because I was so nervous. And she said, "I've seen speeches all over the world. You never look like this." I said, you don't understand. I used to pretend to be him. So I was sitting beside me. It's a totally different, you become a child again. And so in the Caribbean, need to appreciate that this is a massive opportunity, even bigger than just the cricket. I know the cricket is important to all of us. And seeing West Indies doing well in the World Cup is going to be important to all of us. But from a commercial perspective, from a business perspective, from a hosting perspective, we also need to exploit it to our national benefit. And that's why I said we're very good at hosting events. We're the best in the world. We're amongst the best in the world. We can do it. We know to host. I mean, tourism comes from that natural ability to be able to host international people. What we're not as good at is being able to exploit it. And hopefully this time around, we will do a better job.
Mm-hmm. Now, where should the West Indies be now in terms of the organizing committee? We're just about 4 months away. Where should they be?
Oh, if you're in a perfect world, would have been all ready from last year. It's never like that in any event, anywhere in the world. It doesn't matter whether it's FIFA World Cup or Cricket World Cup. There will always be last minute issues. What I do know is that everybody's working around the clock now, trying to get things in place. You know, the ICC have guys on boots on the ground here. In fact, Adrian Griffith is here from Barbados.
Oh, wonderful.
Formerly from Barbados, but now, you know, working with the ICC here as a representative on the ground and so on. So it's all systems go because there's just so much to do, so little time. The challenge for the West Indies, of course, is you know, the resources of the Caribbean are just not like the resources of the United States. You know, when I look at the resources available to a broad county, I'm like, my goodness, you know, they're spending, well, I think eight or nine million US just to fix up a stadium, which needs really very little fixing up except for television cameras and that type of thing. It's a beautiful stadium. And you know, it's coming out of the county budget when Jamaica couldn't find $2 million to host the T20 World Cup. And when you talk about the resources available to them, here in the States, there's so many professional organizations that do sports work for teams, for instance. You know, you'll be able to hire and have a tender between the parking companies. You know, you have parking companies that bid for and do work for the Miami Dolphins, you know, Hard Rock Stadium or the Marlins Stadium. And so they're companies that are just set up to manage parking, you know, and logistics. You know, we don't have that in the Caribbean. So it's always those little nitty-gritty details will always be a challenge for us in the region. But, you know, I'm confident that once everybody comes together again, just like they did for 2007, we'll make a great show of it.
Philo?
Hey, Andrew. Hi, Chris. You've given us a mouthful, Chris, and very impressive. Borough County, how far are they in their plannings for this World Cup?
What I would say about their preparation, they've done an incredible amount of work in the last couple of years. And they have individual organizations working very well, dealing with, they will easily handle this kind of event. I mean, they handle this size event every day type of thing at, you know, at Miami Dolphin Stadium, that type of thing. Miami Dolphin Stadium has a capacity of 65,000. And, you know, the companies involved can handle that every weekend. Where I would say their challenge is the understanding of a Cricket World Cup and the various parties that are involved, the various commercial rights that are involved, and the complexities of that. And that's where I'm really trying to help them walk through the raindrops. You know, the commissioner, for instance, in the last press conference announced that she wanted fan zones all over Broad. Now, she means well, and she wants, you know, obviously all the tickets are sold. She still wants the community to be able to watch the matches and so on. But these are things that take, you know, are complex commercial rights. And so you can't just set up fan zones. And so we're trying to work through issues like that. So what I would say from an organizational perspective, they will be organized. They're well organized. They have the kind of resources that the truth is they can throw resources at any last minute problem that comes up because they have that.
I see.
The challenge they have is really trying to get all the different parties involved. You know, there's so many local governments. If you think politics in the Caribbean is challenging, imagine you have Lauderhill City as one city where the stadium is hosted, and the stadium is owned by Broward County.
Mm-hmm.
So you can think about, then you have a Visit Lauderdale, which is promoting tour and travel to the Lauderdale area in general, which isn't necessarily to the direct benefit of Lauderhill, which is the city hosting the event. But each of them have its own mayor and commissioners and so on. So it's a very interesting and complex scenario that I'm trying to help.
Right. Well, time is up, really, basically. We're going to ask Basil. Basil, you're not going to buy a ticket for $10,000, are you, Basil?
Of Network Sports.
No, not at all. I'll be watching the television. But I just want to make a statement what Chris was talking about. A little. Back in 1998, when England was touring the West Indies, Mick Jagger was visiting Eddie Grant, and the two of them flew from Barbados to Guyana.
Really?
And after the day's play, my dad went over with friends over to Palm Port. And when they walked in, Mick Jagger and Eddie Grant were sitting in the corner. And Eddie came over and asked them, come over to the table. And Mick Jagger was like a little high school boy in front of my father. He was like, I remember you when I blah, blah. So I know what you're talking about with Lara and the billionaire. That connection with cricket is incredible.
Absolutely incredible. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we had Shamar Joseph doing so very well. And we have five prime ministers coming on Mason, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks ago. You know, they took time out from their busy schedule to be a part of it. And I do know what you're talking about, Chris. You know, cricket. I mean, Brian Lara, I remember being at Sabina Park already, where, you know, people were not behaving very well. And there was Courtney Walsh coming out and putting his hands in there. Remember that? And the crowd just went quiet. When Sir Viv Richards came, you could hear a pin drop. You remember that? Absolutely. All right, well, Chris.
Remember it. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, of course. Sir Viv Richards is great influence. Thanks for coming on the show. We certainly are happy that you came on the show. Thanks to you, Doc, and all the people who participated. Of course, we're going to come back again next week with another show. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a better tomorrow. It's good night.